Amendment number 87505, Chick Cam Chu versus Exxon Corporation. Mr. Musselwhite, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. At the outset, I would like to try to articulate what I think is the crucial issue here, and that is where, simply stated, where a federal court has dismissed the case on grounds of forum nonconvenience, and the plaintiffs refile in the state court, whether or not that federal court can then enjoin the state court despite the provisions of the anti-injunction statute. Now, having said that, I'd like to go into a little detail about the procedural facts involved here, because I think they're important. In particular, they're important for what was not decided in the original federal court action in the light of this court's decision in Atlantic Railway. The case was, after the case was dismissed on grounds of forum nonconvenience by the initial federal court, and suit was filed in the state court, the respondents removed to the federal court. The federal court, though, requested to do so by the petitioners to remand the case, refused to remand, and again dismissed the case, and that was appealed, and the Fifth Circuit reversed that decision and ordered that the case be remanded. Once the case was remanded to the state court, the respondents then went to the federal court in a new suit and got the permanent injunction, which is the basis of this hearing here. Now, in the meantime, that went up on appeal to the Fifth Circuit, and while that was being done, there was another case proceeding out on the West Coast in the Ninth Circuit called the Zipfel case. And the Fifth Circuit, in this case, in a split decision, held that the injunction was proper under the relitigation exception, apparently. That's the way I read the decision. Because even though there was a difference between the Texas forum nonconvenience law and the federal forum nonconvenience law, the federal forum nonconvenience doctrine preempted the state doctrine, and therefore there was the basis for issuing the injunction. Judge Reveley dissented and held that on the basis of Atlantic Coastline and other Supreme Court authority that was not a proper decision and that those matters should be left to the state court to decide and that the injunction was not proper. His dissent agreed almost four square with the unanimous decision of the Ninth Circuit in the Zipfel case, where they held that in a similar situation, also a maritime case, the injunction was improper. Now, having said that, I'd like to, as I said a moment ago, to point out what was not decided in the original federal court action. It was not decided that, as apparently contended by the respondents in some of the amici briefs, that the case could not be tried anywhere in the United States. Nor was it decided that it had to be tried in Singapore. What was simply decided was that federal court would not accept the case on grounds of forum nonconvenience, that federal court did not feel that it was a convenient forum for the case, and imposed conditions so that if the plaintiffs wanted to, they could go to Singapore and have the case adjudicated there.
It was decided that Singapore law would apply, though, wasn't it?
It was decided that American law would not apply, and the court's discussion that indicated that it felt Singapore law should apply.
Wasn't there in the attempted state action a claim under state law filed?
There was a contention under state law, the state wrongful death statute.
So you concede that at least could be enjoined?
No, Your Honor, don't. Because
that was decided by the federal court.
It was dismissed on grounds of forum nonconvenience.
Necessary predicate of that forum nonconvenience decision was the determination that the governing substantive law was not that of the United States.
It was not that of federal maritime law. That's
just
correct.
Federal?
Just federal. There was no decision that the state, they dismissed the state law claims on the grounds of forum nonconvenience. They did not decide that state law could not apply.
Didn't they say that Singapore law governed?
The court indicated that American federal maritime law did not apply, and so doing indicated that it felt like that foreign law would apply. And that was the decision.
Okay, they did say that foreign law applied.
That's the essence of the decision.
Well, if that's the essence of the decision, why can't they enjoin the bringing of an action under the law of any of the United States?
Well, because we're getting into the forum nonconvenience issue as that relates to choice of law, and really what we have here is a forum nonconvenience issue and not choice of law. Certainly, the foreign law claims were not adjudicated. That is, Texas has a statute, Justice Scalia, which allows a plaintiff to adjudicate its rights under foreign law.
Oh, I'm not talking about that now. I'm just talking about trying to bring an action saying, after the federal court has just said Singapore law applies, that's all been fought out, it's been litigated, it's been decided, then you try it again in state court and say, yeah, we think state law should govern. Federal court just said no.
Well, I would have to concede that the defendants or the respondents could, in the state court action, contend that that was collateral estoppel or directly estopped by the determination of the federal court, first federal court, that Singapore law applied and by implicitly rejected the state law claim.
And if that's so, the federal court could, if the other requirements of the discretionary judgment are met, could enjoin the bringing of that claim that is already determined by the federal court.
No, Your Honor, I have to respectfully disagree on that. I do not believe that under the anti-injunction statute as construed by this court in a number of cases, beginning with Atlantic Coastline through versus Van Electro, and as recently as Parsons Steel, I do not believe that under that doctrine a collateral estoppel or direct estoppel issue can be the subject of an injunction under the relitigation exception. Only cases that's fully adjudicated upon the merits, as the revisor's notes say, can be the basis of an injunction under 2283. And that's what's the bottom line here, is that there are certain collateral estoppel issues that can probably be successfully asserted in the state court action, which is where this belongs now. But there are not issues, even though they might amount to direct estoppel or collateral estoppel, which could be the basis of an injunction under the relitigation exception.
But I suppose you're saying that if there is an estoppel, that claim should be first made in the state court.
That's one.
Well, wouldn't you think if the issue has been decided in the federal, if Singapore law applies, certainly Texas can't apply its wrongful death statute.
That would be true.
All right. So the federal claims were dismissed in the state court, and you didn't complain about that.
Federal claims were dismissed. That was appealed, but we lost it.
So that just leaves the Texas claim.
And the foreign law claims, Your Honor. Texas has a statute that allows plaintiffs to bring the foreign law claims in the Texas courts and have those adjudicated.
Well, in any event, the defendants in the Texas courts could claim collateral estoppel.
I think there's no question they could claim it. And
would they win?
I would have to say that on the basis of the fact that the federal court, if the federal court decision is that clear, and I do not think it's that clear,
right,
Justice Scalia, but there's no question there's intimations in that federal court judgment to the effect that they believe Singapore law should apply and not American.
Right, so assume they can, if the Texas courts rejected that collateral estoppel claim, it would come on up through the federal, through the state courts and could get here.
That's right, Justice White.
You think the estoppel claim should win in the state court? If it was made.
Knowing the background of this case, in this particular case, I do not think it should win because the court did not directly address that issue. Even though, as I conceded to Justice Scalia, the first federal court did not say, we're now going to decide whether Texas wrongful death statute will apply to these claims. It just simply said, federal maritime law does not apply, and the reason we don't think federal maritime law applies because it appears to us that the foreign law should apply.
But you say whether the collateral estoppel claim would win or lose, it is not the basis for an injunction under the anti-injunction.
Exactly. Your Honor, in your decision, your opinion in Vendo versus Van Electro, you indicated that we should look to the pre-Tusi cases because of the revisor's notes refers to those cases when the 1948 amendment was enacted. And in looking at those cases, and I read every one of them, there's not a single case that didn't involve a complete adjudication upon the merits of the case. As a matter of fact, Justice Reed, in his dissent, refers to complete adjudications. And
why didn't you object to the dismissal of the federal claims?
Well, we did. We lost, Your Honor.
Well, I know, but why? Was that dismissal correct?
I don't agree with it, but it's the law.
The federal court dismissed them because there wasn't any federal, couldn't be a federal claim if Singapore law applied.
That's true. The federal
court. So it's like a motion. You dismiss for failure to state a cause of action.
That could be construed under Romero. That's Romero indicates that that's the way you construe a, when you find that federal maritime law does not apply, then it could properly be a dismissal for failure to state a claim.
And you don't think that that would be the, you think you can retry that out in a state court?
Well, the reason it couldn't be a complete, they didn't solve all the problem, Justice White, was that we had the other claims there.
Well, I know, but how about the federal claims? Couldn't the federal court enjoin the retrial or attempted retrial of the federal claims in the state court?
Your Honor, I submit that they could not. I think that they would be successful, Justice White, in going into the state court, raising the collateral estoppel or direct estoppel as to the federal claims. I think the respondents would be successful. We conceded that.
It's like they would be on the state claim.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree on the state claim. There's a serious, more serious question there, I concede, right, because it was pled. But foreign law was not pled in the original federal court claim, so I don't think there's any question that there's no estoppel, direct, collateral, or any other kind of res judicata against the foreign law claims being prosecuted in the state court.
Mr. Musselwhite, is it clear that the federal decision was not a decision on the merits with regard to the state claim and the federal law claim?
It was a decision on the merits with regard to the federal law claim. They held that the Jones Act, that the plaintiff was not a seaman. That's a decision on the merits.
Why isn't the decision that there's no claim under Texas law, if they made that? I understand you contest whether that's clear or not.
Okay.
But why isn't that equivalently a decision on the merits?
Because it's a dismissal on grounds of forum nonconvenience. They dismissed the state law claims and all other claims other than the federal maritime law claims on grounds of forum nonconvenience, Your Honor, and without prejudice. The order says without prejudice, so it cannot be a decision on the merits as I see it. And certainly it's not the basis of an injunction under 2283. It does not constitute that kind of order that can be a subject of relitigation exception injunction. In any event, what else was not decided in the case below was, and this is very important when we read Atlantic Coastline, was that the preemption question was not raised or decided in the original federal court action. Moreover, there was the state law, forum nonconvenience law, that is, what law would apply or what is a state law and how it would apply in this particular case and whether or not the case could be appropriately dismissed on grounds of forum nonconvenience under state law, was not raised or decided in the original federal court action. So that, and when you read Atlantic Coastline, the bottom line of all of it is that Atlantic Coastline, as I respectfully read it, says that unless issues are actually raised, it cannot form the basis of an injunction on the basis of the relitigation exception. So these issues not having been raised, as occurred in Atlantic Coastline, the preemption question was not raised there. Therefore, the majority of the court held that the injunction was not proper. And the same thing would apply here, and I think Atlantic Coastline in that regard is pretty well dispositive of that issue. Now, even if preemption could be the basis, and I say that even if preemption had been raised, I don't think preemption is the kind of thing when you read three decisions, that would be Vendo, Atlantic Coastline, and Amalgamated Clothing Workers. All three of those cases speak very strongly about, and Chief Justice Rehnquist, in his opinion in Vendo, said that whenever you get to have the question of preemption or federal interest versus the anti-injunction statute, the federal interest preemption question must give way. And the court will not sit and balance those matters. They'll leave it to Congress. And therefore, and as stated in Atlantic Coastline, preemption is not one of the exceptions to the anti-injunction statute. So that I think the respondents are misplaced in trying to contend, as was Judge G in the Fifth Circuit, that on the basis of preemption, an injunction can issue. I think it's clearly contrary to those three decisions. Now,
what do you mean by preemption?
Well, the respondents have contended, Justice White, that they can see that there's a difference between the federal forum nonconvenience law and the state forum nonconvenience law, but that the reason that an injunction can issue is because the federal foreign nonconvenience law, since this is a maritime case, preempts the state forum nonconvenience law, and that therefore an injunction can issue. And I'm saying that.
So you think that is that different than talking about estoppel, collateral estoppel, or res judicata?
That's different. Yes, it is. I think as Chief Judge Brown of the Fifth Circuit says, preemption does not equal res judicata. It's just what I'm saying is they can't bootstrap themselves into a res judicata type of situation that would justify an injunction under the relitigation exception by using the doctrine of preemption. And that's stated very foursquare by this court on three occasions. So I'm saying that even if they had raised the issue of preemption, the issue of preemption being the focal point of how they try to justify this injunction, the injunction must fall. Now, even if they had the preemption doctrine could be the basis of an injunction in other cases, and it could possibly have been in Atlantic Coastline, it certainly cannot be in a forum nonconvenience case, we respectfully submit. And there are several reasons for this. The main reason is that the test laid down for both the second and third exception to the anti-injunction statute, being the second being the aid in jurisdiction, and the third being the relitigation exception, or to effectuate and preserve a judgment, is that in order for the injunction to be justified, the action in the state court must in some way interfere with the adjudication by the federal court. Must impair, as I believe the term was used, impair the adjudication by the federal court. It's hard for me to see how the state court action in this case could impair the federal court in the adjudication of this matter when the federal court says we don't want to adjudicate it. We refuse to adjudicate it. We're dismissing it on grounds of forum nonconvenience. And by using the test that was laid down, and I believe it was Chief Justice Rehnquist in the Vendo case, it said that test applies to both the second and third exception. And this was also discussed in Atlantic Coastline. That being the test, I don't see how any injunction can be justified in this case because there's nothing in the state court action now that the federal court has said we don't want to adjudicate this case, how it could be said that the state court action could in any way impair the right or the power of the federal court to adjudicate a case it doesn't want to adjudicate. So also, we believe that the doctrine itself, when you look at the Supreme Court cases, this court's cases, on forum nonconvenience. And I'm speaking primarily of Missouri versus Mayfield and Parsons versus Chesapeake. Now, Missouri versus Mayfield is a very important case, in my opinion. The respondents try to downplay it. And it was an FELA case, not a maritime case, and it was not a 2283 case, anti-injunction case. But what this court held in Missouri versus Mayfield was that a state court has a right to have a doctrine of forum nonconvenience if it wants to. It has a right not to have a doctrine if it wants to, and which may very well be the Texas situation under its open forum statute. Or it may have one, and its criteria may differ from the federal criteria. But the one.
Don't you read Judge G's opinion, which I realize you're challenging, is saying that in maritime cases such as this, a state doesn't have the latitude that it might have in an FELA case to have its own forum nonconvenience doctrine.
Well, Your Honor, I go right to Justice O'Connor's opinion in Talentire, and we talk about the savings to suitor clause, and I just do not believe and agree and see that there's any way that there can be a preemption under uniformity or whatever, a reverse Erie, of a forum nonconvenience determination. The Supreme Court, in describing what a forum nonconvenience determination is in Missouri versus Mayfield and Parsons versus Chesapeake, has indicated quite clearly that each court has a right to decide what that doctrine is and decide it for itself. Now, all the cases I've read on maritime preemption, Your Honor, have dealt with substantive rights. And Justice O'Connor made that statement about at least four or five times in that opinion in Talentire. And it seems to me that, and what this court held in Talentire was that the savings to suitor clauses reserved unto the state courts the right to proceed, the right to the jurisdiction, the concurrent jurisdiction to handle maritime cases and admiralty cases. And if we were to agree with the respondents in this case, the savings to suitor clause would be wholly nullified because In Tyler Tyre, it said that the law, the law of the state, the substantive law of the state must give way to the substantive law, maritime law, the federal maritime law, and I can understand that. But there's nothing in Tyler Tyre, and there's nothing in any of the uniformity or preemption cases which indicates that a procedural doctrine like forum nonconvenience can be the subject of preemption or reverse Erie or uniformity. So that, and particularly is that true when you look how the Supreme Court has described that doctrine in Missouri versus Mayfield and Parsons versus Chesapeake. So that my answer is that I believe that it does not preempt. But I go back to my point, Mr. Chief Justice, that even if it did preempt, it cannot be the subject of an injunction under 2283.
Different points.
I understand. The also another reason that the forum nonconvenience doctrine is not the kind of a doctrine that can be either preempted because it's not substantive, or is not the kind of a doctrine that can be the basis of an injunction under the relitigation exception, is if you read this court's decisions in Piper v. Reno and Gulf Oil versus Gilbert, we can see that this doctrine is a discretionary doctrine. Is one that says it presupposes that this case is, can be tried somewhere. If a court,
but what it, I thought that one of the elements in the forum nonconvenience adjudication is, as Judge G said, was what law applies.
It is a factor. This court stated in Piper v. Reno, it's a factor.
And accordingly, the federal court certainly held that. United States law didn't apply, that Singapore law applied. And that part of its adjudication, it seems to me, I don't know why that isn't conclusive on the state court.
I think it probably will be, Justice White, but it has to be asserted in the state court. It can't be done via the injunction, right?
Well,
because
I know, but that, but I'm talking to your claim that forum nonconvenience just isn't one of those doctrines that can be a subject to preemption or preclusion or whatever you want to call it.
Well,
but if part of it is what law applies, and the federal court has decided what law applies, seems to me that is binding. You can't relitigate that.
Probably can't. Probably cannot. Certainly can't. I concede could not relitigate whether federal maritime law applied in the state court. Could not relitigate that. But that would be a matter for the state court to decide once they raise the issue of collateral estoppel.
What is the state law claim? Is it the wrongful death claim?
The state law claim for wrongful death.
Is it a wrongful death claim?
Justice Brennan.
And if you could proceed with it, what law would apply?
Well, if we could proceed with the state law wrongful death claim, the Texas state law would apply. If we could not, then foreign law would apply under old Article 4678.71.031.
Then you'd have to prove what law? Singapore?
Then we would come in and try the case under Singapore law in the Texas court, state court, and the statute specifically.
Under the Texas wrongful death statute?
No, it's a statute. It's an adjunct to the wrong.
Yeah, I know, but you wouldn't be – your Texas wrongful death claim would be kaput.
The substantive claim.
Yeah.
But there's a part of that statute, Your Honor, or subsequent to it, adjunct to it, which is talks about procedure. And it's the one that is the open forum statute, Your Honor, which talks about, gives a right.
So you would be trying to make a wrongful death claim under Singapore law.
That's one thing we know. We
You'd have to plead it, would you not?
Justice Brennan.
Would you not have to plead a wrongful death action under Singapore law?
We did plead it in state court.
And where did this accident take place, and where did the plaintiffs live, and where does the defendant reside?
Plaintiff is from Singapore, and the accident took place in the harbor of Singapore, where an American traditional blue water vessel was there temporarily. At least it was owned by an American company through another company, and Exxon Corporation, and it was there temporarily for repairs, and the plaintiff, the decedent, was on this vessel to assist in some repairs and was killed when a spindle fell through the deck onto his head.
Texas really means what it says when it says in open courts, then, doesn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, that's for the Texas legislature, and I'm not going to sit here and criticize or not. But nevertheless, it has been, as Judge G states in the opinion, it appears that based upon what the Supreme Court of Texas commented in Couch v. Chevron, that its intent is to allow, if there's in personam jurisdiction, to allow the matter to proceed in the Texas courts, even though it may be on the basis of foreign law.
Mr. Musselwhite, let me, I'm trying to understand what your contention is with regard to the collateral estoppel effect of the federal court determination, assuming that it was made, and I understand that you're not willing to concede it was, but assuming the federal court, in the course of determining forum non-convenience, did decide that Singapore law applies, Texas law does not apply. Now, as I understand you, you say that you can't issue an injunction against the bringing of a Texas law action because the federal decision was not a merits decision. Had the federal decision been a merits decision, then you would be able to enjoin.
Yes.
Even though you're not seeking to overturn the federal decision in the latter case, you're just trying to relitigate one fact. Let's assume the federal decision was some tort action under federal law, and it was decided that A did not hit B. And then you bring a suit, and the federal claim is dismissed. Then you bring a suit in state court, totally different cause of action, a state cause of action, but it's essential to prove your case to show that A hit B. Now, could that state proceeding be enjoined?
And that would have been, in my opinion, would have been a decision on the merits of the case, and it could be.
And it could be. But what difference does it? In both cases, you're just protecting the collateral estoppel effect of a matter that was fully litigated before a federal court. Why should you draw the line between whether the matter that was fully litigated resulted in a merits dismissal or a non-merits dismissal in order to determine whether you can prevent the collateral estoppel?
But that's just it, Justice Scalia. It was not fully litigated. The issues under foreign law, the issues under, I contend, under Texas law weren't fully adjudicated. The case was dismissed on grounds of forum nonconvenience. What was fully adjudicated, we concede, was the Jones Act question, because the basis of that was a summary judgment on the grounds that he was not a Jones Act seaman.
Whether Texas law applies was fully litigated. That issue was fully litigated, wasn't it?
Assuming that is correct, as you stated, I will concede it arguendo, then it would have been fully litigated. But the foreign law claim was not litigated, Your Honor. And under Atlantic Coast Railway, getting back within the context of 2283, and that's what this case is all about, not what the Texas court ought to do if these issues are raised before the Texas court, but whether or not the
you would win on the foreign law claim anyway in the Texas court, no matter what.
I believe so, Your Honor.
You concede that the state law claim would probably couldn't go forward if the federal court decision was pleaded in the state court.
The reason I have some problems with it, now I answer yes, if it was pleaded in the state court, and if, but our position would be that the court did not directly address that issue.
Mm-hmm.
The court, and in order to have collateral estoppel, as I understand the doctrine, or direct estoppel, as Judge G described it, it must have been clearly adjudicated. What the court really did is...
Well, you would say, though, even if that issue of the applicable law was clearly adjudicated, you would say that no injunction could issue, that you would have to plead it in the state court.
That's correct. And that's what Atlantic Coastline says. That's the way it proceeds. That's why, under our principles of federalism, that you allow the state court to proceed, and then after it proceeds, the appeal can come up to the Supreme Court through the normal appellate processes. I'll reserve my time until close.
Thank you, Mr. Musselwhite. We'll hear now from you, Mr. Cooney.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I think it would be useful at this point to focus in on the situation in the state court as to exactly what law applied following the federal dismissal, and then to go and consider what I think is the real issue here, and that is the res judicata effect of the foreign nonconvenience dismissal out of the federal court. The federal court, in dismissing this case, held, as has been admitted, the Singapore law applied and dismissed Jones Act, longshoremen and harbor workers, and DOSHA, and conditioned the dismissal on the defendant making itself available in Singapore. I think there's a very real question as to whether there is any Texas or any state claim that can still be in existence. The facts of this case are very straightforward. A shipyard worker resident in Singapore died while employed by a Singapore shipyard working on a Liberian flag vessel that is admittedly indirectly owned by
What about the foreign law claim?
I think the foreign law claim, it's difficult to see how the foreign law claim comes up, and certainly not in the context that Mr. Musselwhite suggests.
Well, I know, but it was didn't they plead a claim under foreign law in the state court?
They pled a claim under foreign law under the Texas wrongful death statute. The section that we're dealing with provides for a foreign law claim. And the reason I raised the question, it may simply be a point of technicality, but as I understand Talentire, if it stands for anything, it says that state law cannot provide a wrongful death remedy or even cannot augment a wrongful death remedy in a maritime situation. As a matter of United States general maritime law, Singapore law applies. That's the choice of law decision.
So you claim the foreign law claim was just pled as a part of the Texas wrongful death?
It is part of a Texas wrongful death claim, yes, Your Honor, because the statute that is invoked
It didn't claim a right to recover under Singapore law.
It claimed a right, but as I understand it, the right claimed was
Let's assume it appeared in the complaint as a separate count, as a claim for damages of some sort under Singapore law. Now, that could have gone forward, couldn't it?
That claim is alive, and that claim is subject
to being
adjudicated.
And it was not foreclosed by the federal?
Absolutely not. That's the whole point of the forum nonconvenience dismissal. Yes, Your Honor. To the extent that it's alive, it's not. To the extent that it's alive in Singapore, to give some history, in 1980.
I thought the injunction just forbade the Texas court going ahead at all.
Going ahead at all. Here's the procedural situation. In 1980, this case was dismissed forum nonconvenience. No action was commenced in Singapore. Instead, an action was commenced in the courts of the state of Texas. And we have taken the position here that the forum nonconvenience dismissal in a maritime situation under the uniformity doctrine is binding on the state courts, and that this particular type of forum nonconvenience dismissal constitutes a more substantive determination, which essentially decides that the courts of this country are not going to decide this issue because of international comity, because of the contacts of a foreign state, because of the fact that the foreign state's law applies under our general maritime law. It would be better to determine it in that fashion. And so the federal court has decided to stay its hand.
But did the federal court decide that law that you've just described?
I believe that it did, Your Honor. It didn't come out and say in bold letters in the judgment, this case shall be decided only in the courts of Singapore. But it did hold, number one, that Singapore law applied, and it conditioned the forum nonconvenience.
It didn't even say that in so many words, did it? The magistrates, it's the conclusion of the magistrate that the contacts do not warrant the application of general maritime law of the United States to otherwise foreign transactions. That's all it said, isn't it?
I think it goes on to discuss, Your Honor, the fact that it appears to be controlled by the law of Singapore.
I don't find that.
Well, I believe that it's in there, Your Honor. And then specifically, it conditioned the dismissal. The district
court. Is there remedies available in the courts, in the Singapore
Yes,
court?
And that was proved up in the district court.
What's
that
the statute of limitations in Singapore?
As it now stands, Your Honor, I am advised. I don't know for a fact that they have expired. Principally because no litigation was commenced in Singapore in 1980 or 81. They, I think, have a six-year statute. This man died in 1977. The case began in 1978. It's been going on a long time. The narrow issue here, I think, is the propriety of the injunction, and that raises a question whether under the uniformity doctrine a state court is bound to apply the same forum nonconvenience doctrine that has developed in the maritime courts of this country following Gilbert and following Reno. I would suggest to the court that this doctrine is somewhat different from the Gulf versus Gilbert and the Reno decisions. Both of those are diversity cases. Gulf versus Gilbert in the decision admitted that it was drawing from maritime sources for the doctrine of forum nonconvenience. And I think the doctrine of forum nonconvenience as it now stands in the federal courts as a maritime doctrine is different, and it's different in this respect. It is a hybrid. It relies, at least in part, in this court's decisions in Lauritzen and Roditis and Romero, where the court specifically addressed the choice of law problem with regard to our Jones Act and with regard to our general maritime law, and addressed the problems of international comity and the accommodations that have to restrain our courts and any court, any maritime court, from exercising its power to its fullest scope.
The federal court opinion didn't cite any of these cases. It didn't get into this analysis, did it?
Your Honor, it did cite Lauritzen, and Lauritzen was clearly briefed. It's been an
did it decide this particular legal issue that you are now asking us to decide?
I believe that it was at the genesis of this development, Your Honor, and let me put it this way. Clearly, the argument was, in fact, at this time, there were cases on the books, and this determination in the district court can be interpreted to mean simply that once you made the Lauritzen-Roditis determination of choice of law, if it was not U.S. law, forum nonconvenience automatically followed. In years subsequent, the doctrine has become somewhat more developed and is continuing to develop.
At this stage, I am really less interested in whether it follows. It may follow as night to day. Then I am interested in whether the federal court concluded that it followed, so that the federal court has already decided this issue and we don't have to wait for the state court to decide it first.
The issue was presented to the federal court in that fashion. I think the briefs are in the appendix. It was argued as a Lauritzen-Roditis case, and admittedly in 1980, the next step, and that is whether a full-blown Gilbert analysis was necessary or whether simply a dismissal forum nonconvenience, once the choice of law matter was determined, was up in the air. Admittedly, the district court's order is a little sketchy on this point, but I think when you look at the context of how the case was argued and submitted to the court, yes, indeed, Your Honor, I think that issue was...
Mr. Cooney,
yes.
To repeat, you say that you argued to the district court that federal forum nonconvenience determinations preempted state forum nonconvenience?
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that. I don't think that was even necessary.
Argued a traditional forum nonconvenience argument.
Under the maritime concept of forum nonconvenience as it was then developing.
The preemption issue really hasn't been litigated.
I believe that it has, Your Honor. I think starting with Jensen, the preemption issue is really the uniformity issue. And there is no preemption issue here. It's a question of whether a forum nonconvenience decision made by a federal court in a maritime context is preclusive. Does it constitute a res judicata, collateral estoppel, binding effect on the state court? Given the fact that the state courts, under the Savings to Suitors Clause, are bound to follow federal law. That's the whole essence of the uniformity doctrine. The preemption cases that counsel alludes to are statutory preemption matters that are entirely different from the situation we have here. Atlantic Coastline, there was a strike down in Florida, a railroad strike. That district court enjoined that strike under federal law. Subsequent to that injunction, as I understand it, another case held that state law, under which an injunction had been obtained against the strike, was preempted by federal law. And immediately the parties went back to the original federal district court and said, give us an injunction to keep the state injunction from being enforced. I think that's an entirely different
situation.
But
you go back to Amalgamated Clothing Workers against Richmond, which Atlantic Coastline reaffirmed. And you have a flat case where the claim was the state court has no business in this area because these kind of suits are preempted by the NLRA. And this court said that may be so, but you can't enjoin it.
That's right, Your Honor. And absolutely.
Well, why is this case different?
A judgment. A judgment saying this case should be dismissed forum nonconvenience, and that is the very crux of the issue. Without the judgment, I will readily admit that a federal court could not issue an injunction to keep a state court from hearing any case. In this situation, we have a judgment of a federal court saying that this case before us, because of the contacts it has with a foreign nation, should not be tried by states in the United States.
It also said without prejudice.
That's right,
Your
Honor.
It had broad reading of the
What do you think without prejudice meant?
I think they had to say without prejudice, Your Honor, because without doing that, there would be nothing left to try in Singapore. Let me give you, this was addressed.
They could have said that. They said without prejudice.
They said that, yes, Your Honor. And it had to be a forum nonconvenience dismissal, just to say a dismissal under the Act of State Doctrine is without prejudice.
Well, why would a federal court have any business in a forum nonconvenience motion before of saying that a state court has no jurisdiction to try this?
Depending on what kind of forum nonconvenience determination we're making, Your Honor, following Gulf versus Gilbert, Congress passed 1404A so that virtually any indigenous domestic forum nonconvenience determination in the federal courts is now made on the basis of the transfer statute. The only time forum nonconvenience comes up in the federal context is in Piper versus Reno type situations where the question is, should this federal court, is this a convenient forum, or is the convenient forum outside of the United States? And I suggest to you that we've, under the rubric of forum nonconvenience, we now have essentially two different problems that are being addressed and two different solutions. One, we have the ease and convenience problem of why try this case in Virginia when it's easier to try it in Washington because that's where everyone is, versus a case that, as in this case, as is the Kasapas case that was decided, almost identical situation, but for the injunction out of the courts of Louisiana. Or two.
I don't think you're answering the Chief Justice's question. I think he wanted to know why, in order to make its decision about whether this federal court was a convenient forum or not, that federal court would have had to address the question of whether a state court could go ahead. It's totally unnecessary to its decision, unlike, I might add, and I wish you would address more of your fire to that, unlike the decision of whether Texas law could apply. That, I can understand, was necessary to its forum nonconvenience decision. But I don't see how it's necessary for its decision to determine whether the state court could entertain this suit if it wanted to.
Your Honor, I think it depends on the facts of the case and what we're trying to do with forum nonconvenience. I think that there is the federal court could have said, our dockets are crowded, it is not convenient to try the case here, we frankly don't care where you try it elsewhere. On the other hand, the federal court could have said, this is not governed by federal law, it's governed by the law of another nation. The contacts with that other nation are predominant. We do not believe that any court in this country should try the case. It should be tried in Singapore or in Nigeria or in Great Britain or wherever. I think those are two different things.
It might have said that. It could have said it's going to rain tomorrow, too, but that wouldn't be necessary to its decision to dismiss the suit for federal forum nonconvenience in the case before it.
I think that it, again, depending upon what policy the court was addressing, it is in fact necessary and perhaps logically necessary. If we're talking about an accommodation of the international concerns that were addressed in Lauritzen and Roditis, and to some extent in Piper versus Reno, to say that a court can sit down and decide that this case should not properly or suitably be brought or tried in the United States and then refuse to give any meat to that decision and allow a state court six blocks down the street to pick up the case completely nullifies what the doctrine is all about. If we're speaking...
Well, that suggests a forum known convenience that is kind of almost a constitutional type thing, not just a doctrine of convenience as among federal courts.
Your Honor, I would suggest that we're approaching it. I don't suggest that it is a constitutional thing. I suggest, however, that it is in line with the concerns of the court in Lauritzen. It is a manner, or at least it is a device, and I think it's been used by the maritime courts as a device to handle the accommodations that these courts think are necessary when cases that have absolutely no contact with the United States are brought here. And
Could I, as a defendant, walk into federal court and make a motion where the plaintiffs have filed an action like this, saying, you know, I want this dismissed for forum nonconvenience, and I want a declaratory judgment that the state court in Houston has no jurisdiction? Would a federal court entertain that?
Well, in fact, in the Zutfeld case, as I understand it, that's about what happened, Your Honor, when they got their forum nonconvenience dismissal, because there was already a state action pending in Texas. This is out of the Ninth Circuit, and certiorari is pending in this case. They requested the district court to enter an injunction at that time, and the injunction was entered, and it was vacated. And, in fact, this was a case joined to this one as a matter of conflict. In that case, it was clear that an airplane accident that had occurred in Indonesia, the operator of the airplane was in Indonesia, and as far as I can read that determination, the district court was contemplating that this is the kind of case that ought to be tried in Indonesia, not simply, I'm an inconvenient forum, or it's going to be difficult for the parties before me to prosecute this case. A much more fundamental issue, Your Honor.
I just have great difficulty in seeing jurisdiction in a federal court to decide what a state court can do.
Your Honor.
On forum nonconvenience. I don't think forum nonconvenience can apply to any but that court. Not only that, I don't think they can decide if any other federal court. They only say for this court it's a forum nonconvenience. That's all the court, any court can say.
I would respectfully disagree in that, in two grounds, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, at least in this context.
Straighten me out.
In this context, a state court handling a maritime matter is acting pursuant to the Savings to Suitors Clause and is therefore bound by what has been referred to as the reverse Erie Doctrine, by the Uniformity Doctrine. The second thing is that I think that what has developed in Chiesor and Vosboralho and a number of cases in the Fifth Circuit and elsewhere.
This would be binding on the state court.
That's right.
By what statute does that happen?
Happens in this sense, Your Honor, and only in this sense. Admittedly, forum nonconvenience is a discretionary tool. The district judge does not have to grant it.
To protect its jurisdiction.
That's right.
And not somebody else's. You want it to protect somebody else's, too.
No, I'm not after protecting the jurisdiction, Your Honor. I simply...
You want to protect the state court's jurisdiction. You want the federal court to protect the state court's jurisdiction.
All I can say, Your Honor, that if a dismissal from a federal court contemplating further litigation in a foreign country is not binding on the state courts, at least in the maritime situation, it's a nullity. And it does not accomplish the purpose that the courts were attempting to
it's
reach.
It's a matter of necessity. That's your theory?
Well, not completely that, because I think there are good policy grounds for doing
it. The state court can't protect itself.
The state court, in this instance, Your Honor, is a maritime court. It is bound to apply the same law as the federal court. We believe that it is also bound to apply the same forum nonconvenience analysis that the federal maritime court is bound to apply. If that's the case, if that issue has already been decided, it's a collateral estoppel or a direct estoppel by judgment. That decision has been made, providing the objective facts do not change, as was found in this case. Nothing changed. This was not a decision made on the basis of overloaded docket or direct convenience to the parties. And I think the cases that have followed in the Fifth Circuit, and this is perhaps the broader issue that we face here, and in other circuits, have moved towards the idea that once we decide U.S. law does not apply, that as a matter of international comity, that a line has to be drawn. Now, if the uniformity doctrine does not apply that same rule of decision to the state courts, so that the state courts are bound once a federal court makes a decision, then literally in a forum nonconvenience context, of a foreign claim. I'm not talking about a U.S. claim here, but a foreign claim, that if a federal court says no, we won't hear it, the plaintiffs are free to go from court to court to court until they find someone who will take it.
Yes, Mr. Cooney, supposing a federal court had said there are a lot of factors that one looks at in making a forum nonconvenience determination, one of which is the law to apply. And it analyzed the law and found that Singapore law and American maritime law were pretty much the same. It says, I'm really not certain about the law. It may well be that American law would apply. But nevertheless, I'm going to dismiss the complaint because all the witnesses are in Singapore, the accident took place there, the plaintiff lived there, a lot of other reasons, and then dismiss on forum nonconvenience grounds. Would you make the same kind of argument here?
I doubt that I would unless there was
so your argument depends entirely on the fact that there was a determination on the choice of law issue.
It relies on an important part on that, but not entirely, Your Honor. I think that's an important component, and what I would suggest is the developing hybrid concern. The courts the decisions that have gone in this direction to say these cases belong in courts other than the United States rely on choice of law, the place of the accident, really a context analysis of what nation has the primary interest, if you will, or primary contacts with this particular piece of litigation. And that, you know, as a situation here is a good example.
I'm still a little. What is your answer to my question? You would or would not make a claim that the federal court, in the hypothesis I gave you, could enjoin the state proceeding?
If the federal court completely...
Say it says that American maritime law applies.
That's right.
Or it's the same as Singapore law. But all these other factors support a determination.
I don't think I have the same case, Your Honor.
I know you wouldn't have the same case,
but would you
have any case at all?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if we
say... Your case does rest entirely on the choice of law point.
I would disagree that it's entirely on the choice of law point. I think it's that plus, you know, the circumstances of the case. But certainly that. And I would have to say that if you took the choice of law, the determination that foreign law applied, and said American law applied, I do not have my case, and I would not be making the arguments that I'm making.
And what is it that makes you, why is it that you say a Texas court could not say we will pass, Texas legislature couldn't pass a statute saying we will entertain causes of action that are based on Singapore law?
Your Honor, I think that they can, and that's another question. I think the narrow question here is whether, after they have passed that statute, they are free to exercise that law, given the federal determination
that Singapore law is controlling in the case.
It's binding. The argument here, and our argument
why
is...
Why can't Texas say, we grant the fact that we must apply Singapore law, but we're willing to try cases that involve Singapore law?
I go one step further, Your Honor, and say that the forum nonconvenience dismissal, once it has been made, is also binding on the state court because the state court, as a savings to suitors maritime court, is bound to apply the same law as the federal court.
Which is Singapore law. Why can't...
No, not the forum nonconvenience law, Your Honor. Excuse me, I think we're confusing the point.
You're saying that because it's a maritime case, the Texas court must apply the same, precisely the same analysis that the federal court does in its forum nonconvenience analysis.
It must frame the issues under federal law as they would be framed, and he must apply the same criteria. Clearly, it's discretionary. If he were looking at it initially, he perhaps could come to a state judge could come to a different conclusion. But as in Pesquica, in the Third Circuit, once that determination has made, once that discretion has been exercised, a estoppel by judgment arises, and that issue has been decided. There's nothing left for the state court to decide.
Is the question whether an estoppel by judgment has arisen a question of federal law or a question of state law?
In this instance, it's a question of federal law. It would be a question of federal maritime law as to what effect federal maritime courts would give.
What is the authority for that?
Well, I think generally, Your Honor, courts have the power, and I think there's a case in my brief, and it does not come to mind immediately, has the power to determine the effect of their own judgment. And that's a kind of an inherent power of a court. I don't think that it's for the state court, as a maritime court applying maritime law, it's going to have to apply federal law also to determine what law applies.
And well, I understand determining the effect of its own judgment, but that really is analytically different from the second court determining whether or not that judgment must be given res judicata or federal estoppel effect in its court.
That becomes a uniformity question, Your Honor, and that gets, I guess, to the nub of this case, and that is whether the federal forum nonconvenience law as a rule of decision is binding upon the state courts under the uniformity doctrine. I don't believe that that analysis involves preemption. As I've tried to make clear, I think the preemption cases involve an entirely different circumstance. This is a uniformity case, and it's a res judicata case.
I still can't get through my mind why you think the claim stated in the state court based on Singapore law could not go forward in that court.
Absent the forum nonconvenience determination.
No, with it.
Okay, well then my answer simply is that the forum nonconvenience determination is binding on the state court, and it is not.
Why is it binding on the state court?
Because it's maritime law is binding on the state court. It is a maritime.
So that's a preemption question.
Preemption.
No, it's a uniformity question, Your Honor. I think there's a difference in determining what the res judicata effect or binding effect of a.
So you're saying that it's just a reverse Erie.
Yes, sir. It really is. It's a reverse Erie type
question.
Situation.
And so it's a ruling on the merits.
Yes,
It's a substantive rule
under
maritime law.
Yes, Your Honor, because if my analysis of what maritime forum nonconvenience is, it fully adjudicates the case in the United States, subject to the conditional retention of the case should it not go forward in the foreign forum.
Yes, now you're arguing that the determination on the choice of law issue really isn't all that important. You gave me the exact opposite answer earlier.
The choice of law argument, Your Honor, is a constituent. It's a difficult situation. Let me back up and try to give some background. Up until very recently, at least in the Fifth Circuit and many of the circuits, the analysis for forum nonconvenience was a two-step analysis, and first was, does the U.S. law apply under Laritz and Roditis? If the answer to that is no, then you proceed to step two, which is the Gilbert
Well,
and golf. Yes, sir.
The Judge Clark thought that this was a preemption issue. He said, "I agree with Judge G that if I have to follow his course, I agree with him that maritime law preempts."
I think that both Judge G and Judge Clark's use of the word preemption has been very unfortunate, and
I think so.
I regret it. It has given everyone an opportunity to focus on preemption
and to rely on Atlantic coastline.
And I don't think this is a preemption case. This is a reverse Erie case. It's a res judicata case.
Counsel, if you do not prevail in your argument, and these cases can routinely proceed in Texas courts, would federal district courts change their forum nonconvenience determinations? And should they?
Certainly they can. I think what you would do is you would take the meat out of the forum nonconvenience laws that now exist in federal maritime courts. And we're having a lot of these cases. This is not an isolated problem. There are many of these cases coming up. If we don't win here, we go forward in state court, which means that the battle has been won in the federal courts. The reason that the focus is now in the state courts is that the federal courts have accepted this doctrine. They are dismissing cases for trial overseas. They are issuing injunctions. This is not the only injunction.
There's a new federal statute affecting it, isn't there?
I'm not aware of a new federal statute, Your Honor.
I thought one of the amicus briefs talked
about. Oh, you're talking about 688. I think that it's supportive of the policy behind this. It does not directly solve this case.
It doesn't apply to this one. It was enacted later.
And this was in response to this problem of foreign maritime workers coming to this country. An amendment was passed to the Jones Act to specifically deprive them of Jones Act general maritime law remedies, again conditioning it upon the availability of the natural or foreign forum, non-U.S. forum. I would suggest to the court that pronouncement from Congress supports the policy underlying what has been developing in the non-oil worker cases. These are all offshore. This amendment is specific to offshore oil workers. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Cooney. Mr. Musselwhite, you have 2 minutes remaining.
I'll try to be very brief. Chief Justice.
You don't have much choice.
Go to the question asked by Justice O'Connor, which I don't think was answered very clearly, Justice O'Connor. The preemption issue nor the state forum nonconvenience issue. They were not raised in the federal court, original federal court, and they were not decided. Secondly, 688B, I think, is a good, now that you raise that point, is a good point to close on. That was a comprehensive examination of this whole situation by Congress. They did not provide for an injunction against state court proceedings in that law. There's no injunction provided for in the Savings and Suitor Clause. There's no injunction that specifically covers this situation in the Anti-Injunction Act. So I say it's clear, we respectfully submit, that Congress did not intend to allow an injunction to be used in this kind of situation. If there are no further questions.
Yes, I have just one question. Yes. The magistrate's recommendation was that the proponent waive any statute of limitations if the case was dismissed. Did they do that?
We never pursued our remedies in Singapore. My client instructed me to try to pursue the remedies in the state court, so we did not file suit in Singapore, so I can't tell you whether they did or did not.
And your filing in the Texas court was within the limitations period?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. We have a statute that says you can file within a certain number of days after it's dismissed out of federal court. If there are not any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Musselwhite. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next in a